And so we call the vehicle wrap our hamburger. And then we get those clients. We got a completely unsolicited offer from private equity.
Really?
To purchase the company. That lifetime customer value over 18 years of having this business becomes astronomical.
Hey there. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Breakout CEO podcast. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'm here today with Heather. It's great to have you here. And so it's really fun to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. So I just mentioned beforehand, and I probably am not alone. If you're in Utah and you've driven down I-15 through Salt Lake City, we've probably all seen you, the queen of wraps. We've seen your billboards or your, I think it was actually the side of a building, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We've seen that. And I think I've read a little bit about your history, but I'm coming in a little bit fresh here. So we're going to get the story on your background and then also what you're doing now, because I know you're leveraging what you did before into helping other people. So there's a story here to be shared, and I'm glad to be helping to bring that to the audience.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, we've had 18 years. We've had that building on, it's literally the corner of I-15 and I-80.
Nice.
In Salt Lake City. And so it's kind of been an institution for 18 years. And it did not start out that way. It kind of just ended up.
Like you that. Didn't just have a building and think I'll just land a business in here and everything will be fine, huh?
You know, it started with the storage set. So here's our origin story.
Well, and tell us what it was. Queen of Wraps. That's the name of the business, right?
Correct.
Is that also a moniker for you? Or did you go by Queen of Wraps and the business was, there you go. I always wondered that. I drove by. I'm like, is this the person or is this the business or is this both?
Both. It's all encompassing.
Awesome.
So actually our entrepreneurial journey, meaning I own the business of three of my brothers. And
fantastic.
We grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. Like I was the only 8-year-old with a job. And my dad was super excited when fall break came and Easter break because he had all this unpaid labor that we could go and do.
What did he do? Where, how did he leverage you? What did he do to bring you? Did he have his own business?
Yes. So he, by day, he did medical sales. But okay. By night, he owned a business brokerage because he wanted his kids to learn how to work. And so he would buy small businesses. He would break them up. You know, just the OG private equity would either buy other businesses, put them together or break them up into pieces and then sell them. So we had like a million family businesses. So like an art gallery, a framing company, a cleaning company, a handyman service, a grease trap cleaning company.
Wow.
So ran the gamut. Like my dad was completely industry agnostic. He
yeah.
just bought the companies, saw where he could add value, and then flipped them. So like here's one example. I was, I don't know, 12, 13, somewhere that age when you like wanted to spend the summer with your friends. And my dad did not think that was a good idea. So we owned a commercial framing company. So we not only built the frames like for artwork for a hospital in Lincoln, Nebraska, we loaded up a U-Haul.
Drove it out there.
Our family drove it out to Lincoln, Nebraska. And I was literally holding the pictures while the actual employees who knew what they were doing were hammering them into the walls. And we did that for, I don't even know how many patient rooms, weeks we spent in Lincoln, Nebraska. And my dad was like, this is great. You know, July in Lincoln. And
yeah,
that's
yeah.
what we did, like 12 hours a day. And that's just what the plan was.
That's so funny.
We grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. Like I said, this was not my dad's full-time gig. So he pawned a lot of the work, a lot of the
yeah,
work
yeah.
off to my brothers and I. So my older brother was, I don't know, he was before he was a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So he was 18, 19, mm-hmm. you know, somewhere right in there. And that means I was 17.
Yeah.
And we were literally running a commercial cleaning company, doing that.
Meaning doing the cleaning.
Taking in invoices and calling customers. And we were running it.
Yeah.
And so we learned really early on what this looked like. So when an opportunity came, and I'll get into that in a second, we honestly didn't even think twice about it. It was like second nature to us because we had been doing, we knew what it took. We knew what the deal was from the beginning. So this was not like, oh, I'm going to go fly to the moon. It was like, oh, okay, here's a good idea. Let's go for it.
It was just like last spring break or last summer.
Like, no, if this is easier being the boss than working for my dad. Let's put it that way.
Oh, I can imagine. I will say I've spent a summer or a week in the summer in Lincoln, Nebraska, and it is hot and the humidity will kill you.
Yes.
So that was interesting.
And there is relatively nothing to do for a 13-year-old girl in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yeah.
So we were eating at Perkins Family Restaurant and like staying in the Best Western. Like it was, you know, this was 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
The high life, right?
Yeah.
Getting stuff done. Like that's how, so I have a dad he's in real estate, but he's had his own thing. And as you're describing this, I think back to when I was 10 or 12, and I would get on the bus from here and we'd take a 30-minute bus ride north of here. Me and my brother and my sister, who were, I think my sister might've been 14 at the time. My brother was probably 12. I was 11 or something like that. We'd get on the bus. This was our summer job. We'd get on the bus. We'd go out to one of the apartment complexes that he had built. And I think my sister would clean with the staff, and my brother and I don't remember what we did exactly, except we spent a couple weeks sweeping the parking lot and then by hand rolling new parking lines. I'm sure they look terrible, but that's what we did for like the whole summer. So it's just, you know, you just, when your parents are in it, you're in it too.
That's exactly. And that's actually one of the things. I have two daughters and they don't get away with anything now. Just because I sold Queen of Raps doesn't mean that they're not doing things for me. Like they're working for me right now. This is a family endeavor. This is not like, okay, mom makes money this way. No, that's not how this goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a whole family plan here. I think that parents, so let me get on the soapbox for a second here. You know, from the beginning of time, kids have gone to work with their parents. Like my parents spent 3 years in, or 2 years in South Africa. And it was not unusual to see babies, even toddlers, on the backs of these women while they're picking vegetables, while they're picking, you know, whatever, cleaning. They go with the mothers and learn how to work. And not only that, help. You know, they're cleaning the vegetables, they're peeling the potatoes, they're doing all these different things. I don't know where we got off thinking, like my kids just had fall break last week. Like they don't need to go to a trampoline park. That's not what needs to happen. They need to like get real life skills and learn, okay, this is what the plan is. This is what we're doing. They don't need to be entertained. They need to be taught how to work and how to be, you know, efficient member of society. Anyway, that's a soapbox for another day, but I think we're doing kids a real disservice by making their lives, you know, rainbows and gumdrops.
Yeah, no, for sure. I have a 15-year-old still at home. My other three are out of the house now. And as I was driving him back, I'd taken him to tennis and I'm driving him back. I'm like, hey, we got to go clean the office building. Like this, that's one of my kids have all grown up cleaning and probably hating cleaning the office building, right? It's just, we do that. And it's a building we own and rent out and we clean it. And we've cleaned it every week for the last 12 years. Cause you know, that's great. That's what we need to do, right?
Yes.
And he's like, I don't want to go clean tonight. We should have done it over the weekend. I'm like, well, we should have, but we didn't. And now it's got to be done. He's like, I want to go to the gym. And, you know, I'm like, dude, I just spent an hour and a half waiting for you at your tennis lesson. Like, we're going to go clean now. And he's a great kid, right? He's really good. So I'm just putting him on the spot for maybe a little outburst in the moment, right? But that's, I agree with you 100%. It's a soapbox worth standing on for sure.
And I feel like especially parents that grew up working like in family businesses and stuff, for some reason go the opposite. Like their kids shouldn't have these lives of working. And I feel my personal opinion is different than that. I feel like kids should learn how to work from an early age. And these are the responsibilities. This is our whole family. Yeah. And we're all in this together. We're all on a team. It's not, you know, dad bringing in money. And no, that's not how this goes.
Well, it clearly worked for you and your brothers. You guys started, you said, was it 13 years ago or what?
18 years ago.
You guys started this. Why? So how did you guys come upon this? Was this maybe something your dad said, hey, I saw this business, let's buy it and do it? Or did you start it from scratch? How did that start?
No. Okay. So this is like literally the craziest story you've ever heard in your life. So like I said, my dad had a business brokerage. He actually owned the brokerage that bought and sold these businesses. And so he, my younger brother, so we have three siblings that are very close, very, very close. And then we have a huge gap. We have 8-year gap. And then my youngest brother. So yep, the three older kids. So my younger brother was 21. I was 23. And my older brother, you know, the wise older brother was like 24, 25-ish at this point. And younger brother came home from his mission and got engaged, bought a house, going to school, no job. Mm-hmm. And so my dad's like, why don't you pick out a company and you can run it and that'll be your job. And my brother, you know, went through all the listings and stuff. It's like, Dad, I really want this inflatable company. And I am talking like giant gorillas at car dealerships. And my dad's like, yeah, that's not
slides and the obstacle courses.
Not even that. Not even as sophisticated as that. Literally like the gorillas and like the hot air balloons. Like that's it.
And those are rentals, I assume.
Correct.
People rent those out. You set them up for a while and then you take them down to the next
That's
dealership.
Exactly. Okay. Right. So he's like, I really want this inflatable company. My dad's like, there's no way in hell I'm buying this. And he's like, please, Dad, please. So my dad went and looked at the numbers and saw that this business was basically these giant inflatables that were 10 grand, 15 grand each. So he's like, okay, well, that's a really good depreciation that I can use this year on my taxes. So let's go ahead and do it.
Timing was right.
Like full well thinking my brother was going to run this into the ground and it was just going to be terrible.
Okay.
And so my younger brother, who is unreal, like I can't even tell you what an amazing person he is. Like as we speak right now, he's opening up his second Chick-fil-A restaurant. Like
really?
He's just
wow.
Unreal. Like,
and those are tough to get. Not many people open up one, let alone two.
That's exactly. It is easier to get into Harvard Business School than it is to get a Chick-fil-A. And he has two.
Wow,
so he's
amazing.
A pretty amazing person. So he's 21 and he's, you know, got the eye of the tiger. And in the first year, he took it from 100,000 to 1 million with him and a guy that didn't speak English.
Wait, this is the gorillas.
Yes.
We're talking about the gorillas, not the Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A is doing $1 million. You're
telling me
the gorilla business did
a million.
The inflatables was
correct.
Doing $1 million. Okay. That's
correct.
That's
extremely impressive. I mean, this guy could literally like sell sand in the Sahara. Like he is unbelievable. So he realized there were really only two calls to make because at that time in Salt Lake City, you have to keep in mind, this was like in Salt Lake, 2003, 2004, 2004-ish. There were only two major players, Ken Garf and Larry H. Miller.
Yeah.
So he made two calls and realized it was a lot easier to sell to an entire group than to go individually to these car dealers. So he found out who makes the decisions at these two companies, and he was off to the races.
And just for those who haven't, or maybe aren't in part from Salt Lake City, that's because those groups, they were actual groups. They had, I mean, how many dealerships would Larry Miller have across the country?
Hundreds.
He's been going. I mean, that was his deal. He built like a $1 billion business out of it, bought the Utah Jazz from that. They owned across the U.S. Ken Garf, I don't know the size of it, might not be as big as Larry Miller, but it's multiples, right?
It's not. But at that time, Ken Garf probably had, I don't know, 30 to 40 dealerships. So two major players in the market, the rest were just kind of mom and pop stuff. So he went and did that. And the thing about car dealers that is amazing, and other people are this way also, is that if they can make one call and get multiple things, they're going to do that. They want their lives to be easier. So pretty soon the car dealers started asking like, hey, can this gorilla hold a banner that says 0% financing? My brother Matt said, yes, no idea where to get a banner, no idea what to do, gives them an invoice.
Not only can he hold it, we can print it for you.
Why
and
not?
We'll bring it next week after we figure
out
what we're doing.
Yeah. And you pay for this up front, you know? So
of course,
he gives them an invoice and they're like, great, this is wonderful. So he's like, crap, what am I going to do? And our older brothers, who, you know, the wise older brother, 24 or 25 at this point, is a real technophile. And so Matt went to Nate and said, hey, I need to figure out how to like print banners and what to do. And so to put a Band-Aid on it, Nate figured out where to buy it. And of course, we lost money on the first one and whatever.
Sure,
but
sure.
Nate figured out, hey, we need to buy this printer. We can do X, Y, and Z. These are the zip ties we need to use. He figured out all the specifics. He's a real operation genius, like absolute genius with this.
Yeah.
So Nate started working at the family business, at the Inflation Creations is what it was called.
Okay.
And then they started saying, the car dealers said, okay, well, can you guys do vehicle wraps? Now, I just want you to imagine like Salt Lake City in 2005 at this point. Like we were not that far off from horse and buggies. Like yeah, this is a very unsophisticated market.
This was a little bit beyond, like I remember my dad again in the real estate business years before that, but I don't think people were doing a whole lot of wraps 18 years ago, but he had those magnet sign that he had for a vehicle, you know, it's like the for sale sign size and it's whatever your business name and slap it on, take it off, whatever. I don't remember how long he had that. It wasn't very long, but that's what people did that I remember.
Correct. Correct. And we had seen, my brothers and I had seen in other markets, New York, LA, Chicago, Miami, vehicle wraps, like full bus wraps, full truck wraps, things like that. We had seen that in more sophisticated markets, but there was literally nothing going on in Salt Lake. And so we said, okay, this could be something. This could really turn into something. So we got together. And at that point, I was in, and my older brother and my younger brother, and then our youngest brother was like in high school at the time.
And needed to do something on his spring break.
You got it. And, you know, free labor is the best kind of labor. And so we came up with this business plan and said, hey, there's a real hole in the market. We should do vehicle wraps. And the funniest part was like, we didn't know anything about vehicle wraps, like not even one thing.
Yeah.
But we wanted to convey that not only did we know what we were doing, we were the authority in town.
Well, and can I pause you there?
Yes.
Because some people may not make the jump. Vehicle wraps, they use the same or similar equipment as the vinyl banners, right?
Correct.
And so you guys had the equipment already. You'd bought it for the car dealership banners that held by the gorillas or whatever. So that's why that was the leap between what you were doing was just simply you had the equipment. How do we leverage that a little bit more or a lot more?
Exactly. You got it. You hit the nail on the head. That is like what we've been doing for years and years. And I remind me to come back to COVID where we use our existing hardware and just put in a different material and able to get a whole new business plan, a whole new market out of using the same backend. So we started printing these car wraps, and we decided to call it Queen of Wraps for a couple of reasons. Number one, we wanted that authority. We wanted to just like, we aren't just good at wraps. Like we are the queen of wraps. We are it, you know, we are the bomb.com type thing. And the other thing is, and I'm sure in talking to me, this is not a surprise to you or any of the listeners, but kind of rule the roost in my family.
I was going to ask, how did you get, because you had at least the two, you know, you got, I think it's Nate, your older brother, then there's you. And then what was your next younger brother's name?
Matt is the one that owns Chick-fil-A. And then the Brian Chick-fil-A, is my youngest brother.
And Brian's the younger. So yeah, it was interesting to me. As soon as you said, okay, it's me and it was three brothers, I thought, what did Heather do to get Nate, Matt, and Brian, right? To agree. To let you be the face of it. Was it an easy conversation?
Well, it wasn't even a conversation. It like honestly wasn't. It's like, okay, here's the plan. Here's what we're doing. And this is how you're going to help. Just like, you know, Sunday dinner. Okay, here are your assignments. Be here at 5 o'clock. And we are doing this game.
So it wasn't that somebody else said, hey, you know, let's talk. Hey, how should we do this? How should we? And you just said, you know what? I've got a vision. Here's what we're going to do. Let's get going.
Well, we all had like saw the market.
Uh-huh.
It was just, it's not like I was the CEO or I was far from the CEO. I'm just the one with the loudest voice. And so my face is on the side of the building is basically what
you're the spokesperson.
Yeah. Yes.
Very good. Very good.
I've always been like the marketing type person. and the branding type person. And so it was a slam dunk, the Queen of Raps. And honestly, like, here's the real honest truth. You're getting the nitty gritty. There is a Seinfeld episode with The Wiz, and Elaine dates The Wiz. And we had seen that like a couple days before, and like the crown with the ting, and I am The Wiz.
Yes, like, yes.
Wouldn't that be awesome? And
that's where the crown came from.
Yep.
That is so funny. Yep. From The Wiz.
So there we are. That's how. And so we started that with a loan from Dad. And this was, I want you to keep in mind, 2005, 2006, 2007, like interest rates were 0.5%.
Right. Yeah.
My dad charged just 8%.
Wanted you to feel the reality when it, when the economic situation in the you society came back. You know, this is how you need to plan for this, because it's going to be this at some point. And in fact, you guys may have been impacted by the downturn, the recession.
Huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting time. We were so young and so dumb and so stupid. 2007, 2008, like we didn't even know there was a recession going on. We had no clue. We were so inexperienced and young that our competitors literally like went out of business. We were the last man standing. We didn't even know it was an option to close the doors. We didn't even register, wasn't even on our radar, because we had never experienced anything like that. We just, okay, here's your business. You plan your work and you work your plan, and this is what you do. So that didn't even occur to us. And it wasn't until years after we were like, oh my gosh, we like crossed a threadbare rope bridge with alligators underneath snapping and, you know, wanting to eat us. We didn't even know. We were just so ignorant and so young. It also helped that none of us had kids. You know, my younger brother was married. I wasn't. My older brother wasn't married. Like, my youngest brother was in high school living at home. You know, it was just, it wasn't.
You were scrappy.
We didn't know.
Yeah, no. And that's, and you didn't have any of the kind of the perhaps debt or the baggage that a larger company would have, or the, you know, the staff that you know, how do you keep the staff on? I think some people get tired, right? They get in their business, and when a downturn happens, they're like, you know what? I think it's just time. Like, it's been a long time. We've had a good run. Let's just succumb right now and call it a success that we were open for this long. And you guys are just getting started.
Correct.
Like you said, you're young, you're scrappy. You don't have a lot of the other obligations. Were you finding success during that time though?
Huge success. Was it tough?
Even during the recession.
We grew big time. One of the biggest successes that we had is that the building, so we were storage shed behind Miller Honey on West Temple. Like, just think about that location and so far back and behind a honey production. I mean, it was not glamorous. We knew that we needed more exposure. And so the thing about a downturn that's really interesting is you need to get a bigger piece of the pie. Well, smart businesses start marketing more rather than contracting their marketing budgets. They expand that. So they need a bigger piece. And so their marketing needs to go forward. So we knew the same thing. I mean, that was, you know, what, business school 101, that's what it is. You need to get a bigger piece. This building became available on I-15 and I-80 right there on the corner. And it was vacated either just prior to 2007 or just like something happened. I can't remember the exact story, but the landlord needed that space filled like immediately, and especially in the recession. So we got heck of a deal on it. And it's 17,000 square feet, and it was way too big for our business when we first signed the lease. And so our original plan, in fact, we built a wall. We split the building up into thirds, and our plan was to take one third and then sublease the other two portions of the building. Well, by the time we moved in, we tore down the walls that we had just built.
Oh, really?
Because we needed the space.
Wow.
That's how exponentially it grew. And it was all from, and we're drinking our own Kool-Aid. I'd like to bring this up. Like, we are drinking our own Kool-Aid. We have wrapped vehicles. We have banners on I-15, like literally the size of a billboard. And all we did was put up those banners and business just started flooding in. So that's a huge lesson that we learned is location, location, location.
Yeah.
You need to go where your customers are. And like you said, people are driving up and down I-15. That's where people are in Salt Lake City. They're driving up and down I-15. And so the other interesting thing is we learned very, very, very early on that man cannot live by wraps alone. The margins are razor thin in vehicle mm-hmm. wraps. And so again, using our same hardware, our same back end, we like to call the vehicle wrap the hamburger. So that's get our foot in the door. Most people that are getting a vehicle wrap, it's going to be their first huge marketing expense. So this is a pest control company. This is a plumber. This is a solopreneur. And the first thing they're going to do is wrap their company vehicle.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to grow with those clients. So now they need a trade show booth. Now they need banners. Now they need flags. Now they need t-shirts. Now they need, you know, whatever these ancillary products are. And so we call the vehicle wrap our hamburger. And then we get those clients. And a lot of times it's, they came to us when no one else would work with them or no one else would extend them credit or different things like this. So they remembered how we treated them. We still make so many logos, you have no idea, because people just come to us like, I own Joe's Plumbing. Do you have anything? No, I don't even have a website. Okay, well, now you need to call this person. You know, we're almost like their ad agency.
It's the same as the banner concept.
Correct.
I do inflatables. Can I do a banner?
Exactly.
Yeah, sure. I'm curious though about this hamburger thing. I haven't heard this before. It's our hamburger. Does that mean like I go into a fast food restaurant, I want a burger, but then it's like, I'm going to add some fries and a drink. So the hamburger, like, am I getting that right?
Correct. So you lose money on the hamburger. Every hamburger that is purchased at McDonald's, they've lost money on.
I did not know this.
Really?
Yeah, no, this is just in a business book that I didn't read. Like I went to business school and I've never heard this hamburger analogy.
Leader. The other way to put it is a loss leader.
Yeah.
Okay.
I understand that concept. I just didn't. Yeah. I like the hamburger concept. I'm going to use that.
So, and then we sell them the fries and the drink. So that's another lesson that we learned. So location, location, location. And then the second one is the lifetime customer value. Mm-hmm. If we just looked at our business by wraps, number one, our relationships would be nowhere. And number two, these customers aren't worth a lot to us. But if we can get them in infancy, then as they grow, that lifetime customer value over 18 years of having this business becomes astronomical. And so we learned that really early on. And I would equate that, not equate, but I would give credit to my dad for teaching us this back in the day, back when, you know, we were framing these pictures, when we were doing this cleaning. He didn't just see the customer as, what can I get, you know, this pay period or how can I do this? He could see the full picture. He could see, okay, this leads to point D. I want this business. I want this business. And so he's able to strategically leverage those relationships. And I feel like my dad is the original Michael Scott, the win-win-win. Like he wants every relationship to be a win-win-win. And so we learned that very, very early on. So when we started Queen of Wraps, it wasn't even like, oh, how do we do this? We already knew the play. We already knew what was going on. And so I felt like that really helped us expand into different product offerings using the same back end. But Queen of Wraps actually ended up being five companies. Queen of Wraps is the only one that your average person would know, though. The five other vertically integrated companies that help with that stack.
Were those like the website design and the logos and the, or were they more diverse companies that went along with that?
So no, not website design. Well, logos our guys would do. Website design we would farm out to other people. But like for example, my older brother, who I said is like an operations genius, he realized we were paying way too much for material because we were buying them from an in-between source.
Okay.
And he realized that if we bought pallets and truckloads of this material, we could become a supplier and therefore supplying ourselves with much cheaper material. So therefore, our margins would be bigger than your average company. So he figured out, blah, 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 I've got to do X, Y, and Z. And so he lined up truckloads and would sell to other companies this material.
Got it. And so a little vertical integration going on.
You got it. So some people might say, like, why would you sell wrap material to your competitors? Well, I'm paying less for that material than they are.
Right.
Like that, it makes sense. So if you look at the entire picture, it makes tons of sense.
Yeah, no, price leadership, like being able to sell for less and still maintain an acceptable margin that nobody else can beat. Then you can be the price leader in the market. That's fantastic.
Exactly. Well, I'm
really curious.
That's just one example of something that we did.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm really curious. So were there, like, if there was there a moment in your business, and we could, you know, you and I think we have some parallels in how we were brought up and our parents and what they did. And I think we could talk for a long, long time, but I want to be respectful of your time too. I'm curious though about growing that business or, you know, some part of either your development personally throughout that process or the business's trajectory. Like, was there a moment that really kind of flipped the switch for you guys? It sounds like you had pretty good success, maybe even great success right out of the gate. But were there any moments where you said, hey, you know, we really have to shift how we're thinking, or we need to make a change in our, I don't know if you've changed in your team. That's hard when you have a family business.
Yes.
Change in your, you know, the market you're going after. Like what were some of the inflection points though, throughout the 18 years?
So there are many, let me just say that.
Yeah.
There are many. One I want to focus on, for is more of a personal inflection point. So we knew, again, from my parents, from my dad, we knew that we wanted a lifestyle business. So they're, you know, back to grad school, like you have a lifestyle business and you have a scalable business, okay? A lifestyle business provided us trips to Disney World, provided us corporate retreats to, you know, Alaska, whatever, this type of thing. So we knew we wanted a lifestyle business. The other thing is, our underlying mission, our goal, speaking of Chick-fil-A, so Chick-fil-A's goal, their mission, if you walk into any Chick-fil-A, is to glorify God. Yeah. That is their mission statement, is to glorify God. They happen to do that through chicken sandwiches, but their underlying mission is to glorify God. So we knew as a family that our underlying mission was to foster eternal relationships. We knew that was of paramount importance. Money was secondary. We knew that that's what it was. So for me personally, what happened was I was 30. So I eventually got married and blah, 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 blah. I was 30. I was pregnant and I was working in the business and day to day, like this was literally like what I was doing. I was the director of sales. Like this is what the plan was. I was working in the business and I unexpectedly had, not unexpectedly, but at 36 weeks, I had my daughter and I literally left my desk exactly as it was because in my mind, you know, in 6 weeks, I was going to be back at that desk.
Was this your first child?
This is my first child. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
First child. And I was going to be in the hospital bed, and this is how old I am, working on my BlackBerry and like being on the cover of Mom CEO magazine. Like this is how it was going to go. I was going to go back to work. My daughter was born and blah, 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 blah. It became immediately clear. My daughter was born with special needs and it was really, really difficult. Like I can't even explain to you how difficult it was. And I'm a new mom and I just had the C-section. And they're like, here, take care of this baby who has just spent time up at primary children. She was life flighted up to primary children's on her second day of life. And she never took a bottle, never breastfed, never anything. And I'm like, what have I done? Like, this is just insane. And basically the entire first year of her life, she lived at primary children's. And so I was with her. I was feeding her. You know, I was pumping and putting it in a feeding tube. And she had a surgically implanted feeding tube in her stomach. It was just, it was a complete chaos.
Wow. That's so much to deal with.
Extremely chaotic. And she had a surgically implanted feeding tube for 4 years. So I was pumping every 3 hours because she couldn't take formula in order to have enough milk for this child that I was putting it in a feeding tube. I mean, it was just horrific. Like, I can't even explain to you how bad it was.
And I can't imagine that. It's so different from, you know, one day you're in the office, you're like, I'll be back in a few weeks. And then 4 years or more later, I have four kids. None of them have special needs. They're all great. They all have their own challenges, right? But not, no one that you would classify as special needs. I have an uncle though that's Down syndrome. He's in his 60s now. And I look at my grandma who raised him.
It's a lot.
Her entire life, right? Yeah. He was there the entire time. She passed away a few years ago. And I know it's a I don't know exactly the challenges you've had, but I've watched family with some of those ongoing responsibilities. I don't even want to call it a challenge, although I know it's hard. I don't think my grandma would have ever called it a challenge, right? But it's different responsibilities than what you think you're going to, than when you're like, I'm going to go back and, you know, I'll be back in the office and I'll deal with those responsibilities soon. That was totally derailing for you.
Completely derailing. There's an old story about, like, you really, really want to go to Italy and you plan this trip to Italy and you get your passport and you plan out your itinerary and everything. And then you get on the plane and the plane lands and says, welcome to Holland. And you're like, no, I was supposed to go to Italy. That's where I'm supposed to go. But then you live in Holland and you realize, like, oh, Holland has tulips. Holland has windmills. It's just different. You thought it was going to be one way, but your life is different.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened to me and shout out to my brothers and my entire family, because we knew the mission, their niece. So my daughter, getting her better was the most of paramount importance. The business was secondary to all of this. And so my checks kept coming in. I still had ownership in the business. I was still getting dividends. I was not drawing a paycheck because I wasn't working there, but I was still getting dividends and the benefits of the business because of my ownership. And shout out to my brothers, who are just amazing, kind, wonderful human beings. Never once did they begrudge me for not showing up every day, for not, like, we would have a board meeting and my daughter would be in surgery. Sorry, I can't go. We would have a big deadline and they would send out an all hands email and I would literally show up with my baby because I couldn't hire a babysitter because she had such acute needs. Like, she would come with me. And yeah, that sucks when you have a kid in a commercial printing shop, but I didn't have any options. Like, do you want me to help? Like, this is...
Yeah.
And my brothers were so Christ-like and so kind and like, hey, we're all in this together. Let's get this girl better. And so during that time, I stepped back and coincidentally, not planned, not anything, like this just happened to be at the same time frame. My youngest brother had applied to get a Chick-fil-A franchise.
Yeah.
And it takes years to get these things. And so blah, 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 like in, I don't even know what year, maybe 2012, 2013, somewhere in there. I don't know what year he got this. Chick-fil-A called out of the blue. It was like, hey, are you still interested? And so he started down that road. So by the end of these 5 years, let's call it 5 years. So my daughter went back, we finally got ready like for life and we got it all sorted out and she went to kindergarten and then I was ready to go back to work at that point. So about 5 years into this, my other brother got a Chick-fil-A right at that exact same time. And both of us realized like this business is doing better without us.
Really? So wait, you had two brothers, your youngest and your, so that was Matt and Brian, right? I think.
Nate is the oldest. He's my COO. And then Brian is my youngest. He's the CFO. Those were the two last standing in the business.
Okay.
Working day to day.
Okay. So they're in the business.
The middle brother and I ended up leaving the business, the day to day business, 2011 for me, April 13th, 2011, because that's when my daughter was born and my life completely changed. And then Matt was probably like 2014, 2015, somewhere right in there. And so by then, our youngest brother had gone to school, became the CFO, and really just took this to all new heights, could see like, hey, here's our break even. Like he was the one doing all these projections and doing all of this. If we, I totally forget the name, but you know, in grad school, they teach you like, here is the point that you need to make where your revenue, your margins go exponentially. Your baseline stays the same.
Your fixed costs and your variable costs. You cover all your fixed costs. All of a sudden you're everything you make above that. It's just variable costs. And so there's a way higher profit margin for that portion.
And you can scale.
Yeah.
And so he figured out that inflection point and he realized, okay, we're really going to take this off if we get to this point in sales. I think it was like 6 million in sales or something like that. Mm-hmm. Anything above that is just going to be astronomical growth. And not only astronomical growth, astronomical cash. And so we were like, my brother Matt and I were like, dude, we're just going to mess this thing up. These guys have got this thing figured out. Like, we're bogging them down at this point. So just got out of their way. And of course, we went to board meetings and voted on things. And it wasn't all rainbows and unicorns and stuff. It was, you know, there was some, okay, I think we should buy this $1 million machine. Oh, okay, I think we should invest in this, you know, that type of thing. But pretty hands off until, so then fast forward. So I'm going to skip over lots here. Yeah.
So 5 years later, right? Your daughter's going to kindergarten. Is this the point
where my daughter's going to kindergarten? And then let's see, 2000, gosh, just recently. So 2024,
okay.
Last year, my youngest went to first grade. And so I was like, okay, I can go back to Queen of Raps full time. Like I have done it. Like this is, like I paid my dues.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go back. And right at that exact moment, in fact, like a week before school started, we got a completely unsolicited offer from private equity.
Really?
To purchase the majority share in the company. And we all said, yes.
It was an easy decision.
This is what we've been waiting for. This is what we've done all of this for, is this payoff at the end.
Yeah.
I equate that to buying a house or like building a house. So many people build a company and then never actually exit. Like that's where the realization of the money comes.
Right.
And so we had this unsolicited offer from private equity. And we sold on December 19th. It went very, very, very quickly. I think August 5th or so is when they sent us the LOI and we closed December 19th. So
4 months or so, something like that. And you guys, August, September, October, November, December. Yeah. 4 months and you guys had closed and that was the end of last year.
Yeah.
Wow. What has that done for you then to be able to sell that? Like you guys put, I don't know if I have my math right, something 21 years into this, you know, given the ups and downs and the family situations and stuff like that, 21 years, that's not an easy run. I mean, that's a great run, right?
Yeah.
But it's never easy.
No.
How did you, and your brother, at least one of your brothers, maybe multiples, had some other stuff they were doing. Like, how'd that work out for you guys?
You know, wonderful. So first, like, amazing, wonderful. And everyone took away what they needed. Like, here, let me give you some examples. My older brother decided he just wanted the cash and just move on and no equity in the new company. Just, hey, I trust myself, but I don't trust these other guys with my money. I'm a gambler, man. I rolled 70% of my equity. Like I took 30% in cash. I rolled 70%. I also have a husband who brings in money. And so I don't necessarily need to have all of this cash. And also my estate couldn't absorb that much cash.
Yeah.
And then my brother that owns the Chick-fil-A, he's off doing other stuff. So that doesn't matter to him. And then my youngest brother, like I said, he's significantly younger than us. He didn't want his kids to see him retired. He's like, I'm way too young. I can't, my kids need to see me going to work every day. This is not real life. This is not what happens. And so he actually ended up taking a position in the new company. And he's the director of vice president of acquisitions or something like that. He does some, you know, title for this private equity company as part of his deal because he wanted a job. He wanted to actually like keep going in this. So we all kind of took what we needed from this and it's been great. I mean,
that's an amazing journey. And you're leveraging that now too, right? Correct. Like I've seen you on LinkedIn and that's how we connected. I reached out and I said, I want to hear your story. Cause I know there was a story behind this next stage that you've jumped into now. Tell us a little bit about what you're onto now.
So this is the villain origin story. Let's put it right here.
Did you say villain origin?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
This is my villain origin story. So I love my husband. He's so great and he's so wonderful and you know, it's perfect. But December 19th of 2024 was the first time that I had my own money and not had my own money, had a lot of my own money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the freedom that has afforded me has been unreal. Not just the financial freedom, but the emotional and the mental freedom that provides. I do not have golden handcuffs. I am choosing this relationship every single day. I get up in the morning and I am choosing this relationship. This is not because I'm well taken care of and because, you know, we have a house in Newport and, you know, I drive nice cars and stuff. No, this is, I want to be in this relationship. And I have two daughters. And so this became extremely personal to me.
Mm-hmm.
So December 19th, I go and do the holidays and I'm getting my goals for basically the next 5 years of my life. You know, I'm sitting down.
Can I jump in here? Because I think we're going to, I do want to hear about what you're doing next, but I don't want to gloss over what you've just said. And forgive me, because I don't know if I relate 100% to what you're saying, but I think a lot of women probably would. Maybe break that down for me a little bit more. Pretend I'm a man and I don't know anything. Because you explained that. I think you probably explained that really, really well for people who have the context. You said you don't have golden handcuffs. Normally I would think of that. I'm an attorney. And so I think of that in terms of, you know, I have a job and I stay at a larger law firm, which I don't because I don't have golden handcuffs either. But you know, I stay at a larger law firm that I don't even like, and I'm doing stuff with my life that I don't necessarily want to do because I make too much money and I've spent too much money. You used it in a really different way, I think, talking about, you know, the value of your relationship isn't tied to the, call it the financial or other, you know, perks of being married to someone who makes sufficient money for your family, right? You're talking now about, I think, self-worth and your self-image, and not just the money that, But maybe the money is one of the factors that helps you to stand on your own. Am I sort of getting it?
Yes. And yes. Yes to every single thing you just said. Okay. So I'm 44 years old and I am in a situation where a lot of my friends are getting divorced. A lot of people in my neighborhood, a lot of people in my church are getting divorced. And these are people who have been together 20, 25 years. These are people who, several of them married to doctors, lawyers, you know, whatever, all of these different people. And for lack of a better, you know, being tasteful about this, but a lot of these women lead really good lives, like really good lives. And they just stay in these relationships because they're leading really good lives.
Because they're not, meaning from the outside, they're getting what you would think everybody would want in terms of maybe
correct
taking care of themselves or perhaps being taken care of, or
correct. You know,
they've got the necessities. They're able to work or not work if they want to,
correct.
Drive the nice car if they want to, have the nice
correct.
House. Yeah.
However, and I think it's my age. Honestly, I think like there's kind of like a breaking point in your 40s. Several of these relationships that I am witnessing firsthand from very close friends are abusive relationships. Addiction plays a huge part. Different things that you would look from the outside and you're like, oh, that really looks fantastic. And then on the inside, like your friend has bruises on her chest. Your friend has, you know, trauma from not. I am not saying it's anyone. I'm not putting blame on anyone. I am nothing.
Yeah,
nothing.
No, it's life. And we're not here to condone it or to condemn it necessarily. It's that happens. And life, you know, maybe takes us or drags some of us through different challenges. But you're saying that people are staying in those challenges, or they have been staying in those challenges. And now you're seeing people step up and say, I'm no longer going to deal with this challenge. I'm done. I'm going to live my own life.
And that might not mean that you have two vacation houses. That might not mean that your kids go to private school. That might not mean that you you know, are now going to all of these benefits, concerts, right. and all, you might have a very different lifestyle. You might now be living in, you know, you come from a 6,000 square foot house and now you live in an 1,100 square foot apartment with your five kids. So that's what I'm saying as far as like these golden handcuffs go. So here, so that's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is friends, personal friends that I am seeing that are staying in these lackluster relationships where they're just like, well, you know, it's not that bad. I'm taken care of. My emotional needs are not being met. My mental needs are not being met, but my debit card works when I go to the grocery store. And
so it's an either or, like maybe emotionally I'm not really taken care of, but otherwise I am, or, you know, and if I didn't have this, maybe I wouldn't be taken care of, but my emotion, it's a rough time. I'm in my late 40s, you know, and I think I see a lot of the same things that you're seeing. And so I get that. Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that because, and you've pointed out that you've got the luxury of making a choice to stay, you know, making it a point that this is not that you're dealing with any of this. I don't have any idea. We haven't gotten into that, nor will we, but you've got the luxury of providing for yourself and being able to make the choices that you want to make that maybe some, and having the, I don't, is luxury might be the wrong word. Maybe I'll let you summarize it for me because I'm trying to get to a point. Yeah.
And so I came to all of this realization all at once because, like I said, I have two daughters and I don't ever want them to be in a position. I don't want any women, like I'm making a blanket statement here.
Sure.
I don't want any women to stay in a relationship that is not mutually beneficial. I want women in general to choose to be in these relationships, and having your own money and a lot of your own money really gives you, like I said, that emotional, that mental, and that financial freedom where you say, okay, you know what? Here's something. He leaves the dirty socks on the ground and that annoys the hell out of me. But you know what? I'm willing to put up with that. I love him and I'm choosing this relationship. Or the flip side is, you know, I'm completely alone in my marriage. I'm a single mom in this marriage. I happen to be married on paper, but that's not, you know, my experience. Yeah. Like, I don't see marriage as an actual partnership. And so having this money gives women that emotional and that mental freedom along with that financial freedom. And so I really have a fire lit underneath me. Like, I want other people to experience this because it has been so life-changing for me. It's like, it's almost like, so again, we live here in Salt Lake. And in the winter, there is this layer of just gunk. We live in a valley.
Yes, it's the Salt inversion. Lake
Valley. It's so gross.
It makes our air quality lower. Like, it's the worst in the world when that's happening. Like, I've been to Beijing in the wintertime and I'm looking at the, whatever you call it, the pollution, right, in Beijing. And here in the inversion, it's worse. For those of you who haven't been here, come here, come skiing. You'll be up above the inversion. It's really interesting. But if you're down in the valley, it locks in the pollution until the storms come and clean it out.
And it's really, really weird because when you go outside and it's inversion, it's clear skies and the sun is shining. And so you're like, oh, it's a sunny day. You're just kind of like going about your life. And then if you go, like you said, up into the mountains, you can see this layer of gunk. You can see like, whoa, this is not sunshine. It's like you're seeing the sun for the first time. You're seeing the sky for the first time. You are in this haze and what you thought was reality is not actually reality.
No.
And that's honestly how I felt, you know, prior to December 19th, like, okay, this is my reality. This is what's up, whatever. And now I see the light and I'm like, oh my goodness, I need to get the word out on this. Like, we need to get this out here. I have now dedicated the next 5 years of my life to helping 100 females become millionaires through exits because it has been so empowering to me. That's one reason.
Yeah.
The second reason is I have so much press. I'm on a podcast right now. I get asked to do all of these things. I have three brothers that also got rich. No one calls them. No one.
Well, I mean, to be fair, none of them were the queen of raps, right?
Well, that's true. That is true. However, we all got rich, but that's not a novelty. That's not a story. You know, middle-aged white guy in Utah getting, you know, selling a company. That's right. Not interesting. The, you know, 24-year-old Mormon female founder who sold her company, let's put her on, you know, Utah Business. Let's interview her for this. Yeah. Let's do this. I shouldn't be a novelty. I shouldn't be, you know, a unicorn. This should be an everyday thing. So number one is I want to help other women experience this freedom. And then number two is I want more women in the game. I feel like entrepreneurship for women is a slam dunk career. I feel like it is the best career as far as really having it all, taking care of your family, being able to be married, having that flexible time to go volunteer at the school, to drive carpool, all of these different things. It gives you that flexibility. And then third is that scalability. I think women are extremely entrepreneurial. In Utah, the stats are staggering. It's like 70% of new business licenses go to females. So they're very, very entrepreneurial. However, I don't know. I haven't quite put my finger on this, but I either think it's lack of confidence or lack of knowledge for that scaling aspect. So it's okay to have an Etsy shop and like go down and get the ribbon and make the hair bows and put them in the envelope and send them out. But scaling that enterprise is like, whoa, you know, that's crazy. I can't do that. Back to these friends that I have. I have two friends right this instant that are going through divorces and whose husbands are surgeons. And both women set up the practices, did all of the stuff. And neither one of them finished undergrad. Both of them supported their husbands through fellowship and training on all these different things. And in talking to these women, I'm like, okay, why don't you start a business? And both of them said, well, I don't have any business training.
Even like, though they'd set up practice? They'd set up the medical practices. Yeah. No, I totally understand. My wife, Brooke, is amazing. And she was out, you know, our youngest went to, I don't know, first grade or whatever. And she said, hey, I'm going to go find a job. I want to do something. And she actually has like five different jobs that she does because everybody wants to work with her. But at one point I said, hey, if you want, you would be awesome at helping to run the law firm.
Yeah.
And she is the one who brings the underlying abilities for us to actually scale. Like I could be an attorney, I can practice, but to actually scale as myself alone, that would be almost impossible, right? For lots of reasons. But having her and then the team and the frameworks and the structure she brought has been awesome. I've wondered though, because there is this factor in the law specifically where that says, if you're not an attorney, you can't be an owner in a law firm. And so we've always had this strange dynamic where, you know, she applied to be in the Global Sachs small business, 10,000 small business program and loved it. We had to clarify for them, well, she's not an owner, but only because like technically by legal ethics rules, she can't be. And I want to be in a position where I'm supporting her to make that exit of sorts. It's just, and so we've had to kind of divide the business up. And I said, hey, I'm not going to enter, like, I want you to be able to run all the operations of the business as if it's your business. Scale it if you can scale it, run if you run it. But I don't know, there's that dynamic. And so I guess what I'm saying is we're seeing it. And I'm not sure if I'm holding her back sometimes because she's so talented, or if, you know, I'm certainly glad for the talents and everything she's brought to the company. But I think I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I feel like, well, I mean, to your point, so these friends whose husbands are surgeons, medical has the exact same thing. It's called a operating agreement or something like that, where you have to do that. And like the doctor actually owns the practice because they make all the medical decisions. And right. Then the operating agreement, you know, says we'll take 80% of the profits or whatever it is, like that type of thing. So, I mean, there are ways around it. Especially for these two women I'm speaking of in particular, whose husbands are surgeons, like you could do the other thing is skills are transferable. Like if you built up a practice, there's no reason why you can't build up a hair salon. There's no reason why you can't build up a furniture store.
Right.
You know, HVAC, like there's a trade show, whatever. Like there's no reason. They're all business is business. It's not.
So what's holding them? What's holding them back, or what's holding people back in general? Do you think?
I feel like confidence and knowledge. So I feel like that confidence of well, let me answer that with a quote from Tiger Woods. So he was playing at something and whatever, and they asked him, Tiger, like what happened on hole 13? Like, you were too over. And he said, oh, you know what? I just had a bad day. And then I just moved on and I did this. And I know that I'm better than these guys. So I'm going to come out tomorrow and I'm, you know, going to do it. And at the same time, the women were having a championship. And I forget the golfer's name. I'm sure you, like, this is an old story. So I'm sure that
some of the audience will know this. Yeah.
And like a woman had a problem on the exact same hole. And the lead golfer, the Tiger Woods of women, and I'm embarrassed that I don't know her name. And she's like, oh man, you know, and took it more personally, like, oh, I failed at this and whatever. And you know, her confidence was shaken by that. Whereas Tiger was like, yeah, I had a bad moment, but I moved on. The woman internalized it. Tiger did not.
Yeah.
And I think that women have a lot of amazing attributes that men might not necessarily have. And those are great and those are wonderful. But confidence is something that we need to work on. And again, going back when they are kids, back to my parents, like I have three brothers. My brothers are 6'2", 6'1", you know, they're much bigger than me, much stronger than me. But when it was time to rake the yard, we were all out raking the yard. When it was time to go clean chairs, we had an upholstery cleaning company, go clean chairs, they would be moving the furniture and I would be doing like the vacuum thing. We were all working. I was not treated any differently because I was a female as opposed to my male counterparts. So I think that again starts in the home. Like, girls, step up, you know, let's help our women, let's help our future women step into those roles, get those confidence, get those reps.
Yeah.
So when the time comes, they can have the confidence in themselves. Like, yes, I built this practice for 18 years, you know, yes, my husband is the talent, but I am really the person who's keeping this all together, just like your wife.
Yeah.
You know, my husband might have the law degree, he has the piece of paper, but I am running this show.
Yeah. You know, no, I think I'm really lucky. If I didn't have my law degree, she'd probably be doing this without me.
And there are so many women that have those capabilities. They just need to step into that power, step into that confidence, take that seat at the table. So working on that confidence. And then number two is the knowledge. I feel like women need a lot more base knowledge before they feel like they're qualified.
Which might be a confidence thing too, right? They don't want to just jump into it until they feel like they're ready. And my wife talks about the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program as being really a big stepping point for her, where she gained a lot of confidence to feel like she knows what's going on. Well, so this has been fantastic. How would people, the women listening to the show, or maybe some of the men who know some women listening that should talk with you, who would you say would be at the right stage to reach out to you about what you're doing? And then what's the best way to get a hold of you or get in touch with you?
So right now, like, I don't do startups. Let me just tell you that, like, right away.
I've
been there, done that. I'm way too old.
Yeah.
So my ideal client, I will work with women or men, because I feel like a rising tide lifts all ships. And so I know that if I work with men, it'll help women. I just have a soft spot for the women. So my ideal client would be someone who's ready to scale, meaning that they have about 10 employees-ish, $1 million in top line revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a repeatable process is basically what I'm looking for. And I like to just come in and pour rocket fuel. Like, that is my jam. I love that growth stage. And then once you hit about 15, I don't really have much interest. It's that, you know, in between stage, that scaling stage that I have a passion for and I'm good at.
Well, so, I think it's a good stage. There's a lot of, I've talked to other owners where that's the hard part, right? Getting
really
to
hard.
Kind of your first million, you can kind of do that on your own without the systems, you know, with a small team. But getting beyond that, you either have to grow your chaos in some way and manage that while getting, or you have to start putting systems in place. You have to start building processes. You just have to start getting repeatable things. So that's a tough zone for people. So it sounds like it's probably a really good time to have somebody who's been there step in.
And the funny part is a lot of entrepreneurs I would call mavericks, like the maverick, mm-hmm. I'll figure this out. I don't need a coach. I don't need a consultant. Right. And so here's my third caveat. So they need to have about 10 employees. They need to have $1 million in top line. And third, they need to have worked with a consultant before, because I don't want to be breaking in any horses. Like, this is not, they need to know my value before I walk in the door.
That's funny. I don't want to break in any horses.
Yeah. It's hard to be the initial. You become the focal point of like all the rage and the hatred of that scaling. Cause there are a lot of growing pains in scaling.
And yeah, so that's they like, have to sounds like being a parent. You're being a parent to a teenager. Yes. It'd be nice to be a parent to someone who's been a teenager before, I guess. That might be easier.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Yeah. Yeah, so. Exactly. That's exactly. Those are my three qualifications for people that I work with. And that's what I'm doing right now. My company's called Buy Scale Sell. You can find me at buyscalesell.com. I'm really active on LinkedIn. I post every day, just random, seemingly random. My brain is always going, you know, a million miles an hour. And so they connect to me, but other people might seem random. But different thoughts on business and entrepreneurship and women in business, leadership. And like I said, I've literally dedicated the next 5 years of my life to helping other people get to that exit.
Yeah.
Because I'm just a fan, man. This has been wonderful for me and life-changing. And I want other people to feel that.
Experience the same thing. Well, I love the offer, and it's been I found you on LinkedIn. I mean, of course, after seeing driving by that building so many times, found you on LinkedIn when you started speaking out about the Buy Scale Sale. I messed that one up, but we got to repeat it a couple of times. Buy Scale Sale. That's where to find you. After seeing you start posting about that, that's when I'm like, this is a really interesting story. So it's been fantastic talking to you. I've taken way too much of your time. Your cleaners have probably come and are already going, you know, at your place. So I'm glad I haven't interrupted that, I guess. But thank you so much for taking the time to be on here, Heather. It's really been a pleasure. And I think our audience is going to get a ton out of this.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been fun. And for the audience, thank you for joining us again on the Breakout CEO Podcast. It's been a pleasure, and we'll see you next week.